really allows it to bubble up. And so American citizens are really quite, they're just unaware of what's happening to them and what's driving it, of course, and that's legal immigration. And the consequences, which are 140 million more people added to our country here within 31 years. We're already 30 million into it, so that's another 110 million that are going to be added. And so, yeah, that's what I do. I work pretty hard all week long. And right now I'm finishing up, and I just finished up, as I said last week, The Strange Death of Europe. And I'm finishing up two more parts of the series, which will end with seven parts. Essentially, it's a book report, a synopsis, if you will, cliff notes, of how Europe was destroyed by massive immigration coming in from Africa, the Middle East, and beyond that. And so, I have a full week each week, and that's what I do.
So you do like a little column for Washington, D.C.?
Yeah, it's called Capitol Hill Outsider. The publisher his name is Chip McLean, and he's right there in Washington, D.C. And there are a number of news service websites in that arena. And so I publish on them, and I'm pretty well read by literally several millions of readers read my work each week. And
that's
what
great.
I try to do, I try to connect the dots because most people just, they see this growth, and they see the air pollution and the brown clouds and the water scarcity, and they see their energy bills go up, and they see their taxes go up, and they see new buildings everywhere. You see all these giant cranes in every city across America, and they just don't put two and two together. But again, as I've said, we add 1.7 million immigrants into this country every year. We also have an addition of around 1.2 million Americans from births. We have 900,000 immigrant births every year, so we're well beyond 3.1 million net gain every year. And you just do the math on that, and by 2050 we'll have another 110 million people.
What you just brought up is a perfect segue into one of the first things, or the last things, I was looking at that I wanted to talk to you today about. There's a word now for trauma caused by distance from nature, and it was I think you might have even brought this up before. There's a professor called Glenn Albrecht from Australia, and he coined a term called psychoteratic, I think it's called, and it's the beginning of vocabulary to discuss the relationship between mental health and the environment. So people are being traumatized by seeing the environment destroyed, correct?
Well, they're not only being traumatized, they're being uprooted from the biorhythms of their lives. And that was a book by Leonard called Transition. Of course, the other book I recommended was Stalking the Wild Pendulum by Itzhak Bentov, about how Western people are separated from nature so much so that they lose their biorhythmic harmony with the planet. And as they do, they do everything under the sun to try to fix it. And if you're in a city like New York City, you're in concrete and asphalt and glass, and you don't touch the earth, and you never literally see the earth because you are so completely isolated from nature. And when that happens, you have a usurpation, if you will, of your biorhythms, and you have these energies, these vibrations are aberrant. And once they're aberrant, you start doing things like eating too much to make up for it. You go on shopping sprees, you smoke, you drink, you do drugs to dull the pain or dull the meaninglessness. And so, exactly. There's quite a few books out there that show why Western humans essentially are going crazy by living in cities.
I try every day to take my dog to walk in the forest here, because I live, right by a state park. And it's very interesting, because I came here it's been over 20 years ago, and I was in Cincinnati, and, I was in my mid to late 20s, and there was something profoundly wrong, you know? And the only thing I could think of was all the traffic and all the congestion, and I just had to get out of it, and I was lucky enough to get a job offer up here, but it really affects you, being away from nature. It has a traumatic effect, doesn't it?
Oh, it truly does. Psychologists and therapists, in fact, I was skiing yesterday, had a nice 10-inch powder day at Winter Park, Colorado, and I was going up on one of the slow lifts. It was like 12 minutes. It was a long haul on a triple, and I had two therapists. They were mental health therapists in the school system in Denver,
wow.
And they had taken the day off, and they were talking about how the kids are just, they're having so much TBI, number one, traumatic brain injury. They're having PTSD, essentially, from their cell phones are just dragging and driving them beyond the biorhythms of their minds and their bodies. And they say, we've got quite a health problem. You know, and what are the things they do to try to solve it? They start vaping, which is another form of smoking, or they smoke, or they go drinking, or they get stoned out of their mind 7 days a week. And when you start doing that kind of alternative mindset, you really do lose touch with nature, and you lose touch with your biorhythms, and you lose touch with having a meaningful life, because you're always in an alternative universe in your mind. So yeah, they said, my gosh, we should literally take all cell phones out of all schools. They should be checked at the door.
Wow.
So these kids can't sit there all day, and just because kids are going to be kids, and they're so addicted to those cell phones that they are not doing their schoolwork. They're not paying attention, and they're simply not learning as they should be learning in order to be a functioning and well-adjusted adult.
You know, in kids that have never seen nature, if they've grown up in the city, they will have no idea what's wrong because they have no frame of reference.
That's correct. Yeah, they have no frame of reference. You know, it's funny. As I said, I have my farm up in in Michigan there, just south of Cadillac, and I have, it's 80 acres and a big farmhouse that sleeps 13. It's already booking up for the summer.
Oh, great!
And people get to walk. We have probably 3-4 miles of trails. Oh, at least that much. And those trails lead down by our small lake, a big pond, small lake.
Mm-hmm.
They lead out through all the deep woods. We've got 60 acres of hardwood forests and maple trees and poplar and oaks and you name it. It's a beautiful, and it's all rolling, so you get to go up and down.
That's awesome.
And it's quite beautiful because you get to see the wild turkeys, you get to see fox, you get to see the geese in the pond, or the mallard ducks in the pond. But you get to see the hummingbirds. We have three big feeders off the old windmill in the back, and you get to see the feeders, and we got a big fireplace, and it's just beautiful. Yeah, anybody wants to go, just go to Evolve and just go to Leroy, Michigan, and if you want to rent the place, it's very inexpensive, and we offer to groups of Girl Scouts, Boy Scouts, and CEOs from Chicago that want to come up and unwind. We do have Wi-Fi there, so they can take pictures and send them out, but they really get to, there's no TV. We just will not have TV. We want you to go out. My brother and I own the farm. We've owned it for 70 years now. It's been in the family, and we want you to go out and take a hike. Take a hike. Go dabble your feet in the pond, and in the back of it, we have two stone bridges, and one of them goes over a babbling brook, and you can sit there and dangle your feet in the babbling brook. And then we have wildflowers everywhere. The hummingbirds are flipping, flying all over the place. We've got hawks above. We've got deer in the woods all the time. You can't miss. We literally have, because we keep it as a nature, nature center.
Mm-hmm.
And so people have a great time. And then it has a big fireplace in the one back room in the house, the solarium, which is all glassed. So during your stay at the farm, we call it the Rose Lake Wilderness Retreat. And it's absolutely stunningly beautiful. It just takes your breath away in the spring when the flowers come out. We've got apple orchards all throughout the farm there. We've got blackberries and raspberry bushes. So, yeah, it's a pretty cool place for those who want to just connect with nature.
Well, how often do you get out there? That's about 1,000 miles away for you, isn't it?
It's 1,250 miles away, and I go there twice a year just to do all the maintenance and take care of stuff. My brother comes in once a year, and he does his thing, and in September, October, and we have a cleaning person take care of all the sheets and, you know, the towels and all that. It has two bathrooms and a shower and tub and all that goes with it. But you know, where I live right now at 8,000 feet in the Rocky Mountains, I mean, literally, I'm staring out my window right now and all I see is pine trees.
Oh, that's so great.
Yeah, it's great. It keeps me sane in this very high speed, if not crazy wild world we're in now.
I also feed the animals, and I had like 10 deer out here the other day, and all kinds of beautiful songbirds like cardinals and blue jays. Those guys must stick around all year. I don't know how they do it.
You know, they some of them die, but the ones that live. We have three different feeders in the winter, so we have about 15 varieties of birds that just love to have our back deck, and they just entertain the daylights out of us all the time. And for me, it's the spiritual aspect. If you remember John Muir, the great environmentalist and mountaineer, certainly way back there from 1838 to 1914, and who's the man who created the national park systems along with Teddy Roosevelt, he said, the mountains are calling and I must go. And that's one of his quotes, but he's got lots of other quotes that are just so beautiful. Like, you go to the mountains and settle yourself among the gentians and the meadows, and your troubles will fall away like autumn leaves. He wrote great prose, and he's one of my heroes in this whole life. But anyone can do that. They can change their situation, at least in this point in time, and they can go to the wood and go to the lake and go to the river and go to the mountains and live a really balanced life that way, and I highly recommend it.
It's very healthy for you. I'm going to change gears here. I kind of like that we got off on that really nice tangent, because I'm going to talk about, have you been writing anything on Michael Cohen's testimony?
You know, what I try to do when I write, I'm just finishing up that 7-part series on the strange death of Europe. Mm-hmm. And it's a fascinating book, and it shows why and how. And his last chapter is poignant beyond imagination, in that he says point blank, I've just showed you this whole book, and as you can tell, there's no getting Europe back. It's never going to be Europe again. It's going to be this Frankensteinization of Europe, with all these people from all over the world that have no affinity toward European culture and certainly European excellence and all that goes with that, and education and so forth. So I finished that, and I'm working on those two columns. But on Thursday, I published letters to my two senators, and I put down 10 points. They're all yelling and screaming up there, and yet they're doing nothing. They haven't done anything, you know, against the 300,000 illegal alien pregnant mothers who come across the borders every year and birth their babies, and we're all paying for it with our taxes. They don't do anything about E-Verify, and they haven't for 20 years to stop, you know, employers from hiring illegal aliens. And I went right on down the line saying, you're making $194,000 a year. You've been in Congress. Both my senators have been in Congress for 10 years. Jeez. Each, and they haven't done anything. And I pointed out all 10 of the things that they haven't done. And so what I ask all my readers across the country is take that same letter as a template and send it to your own, you know, because I sent it out last week. I sent it in hard copy, and I sent it in email. I want somebody to read it in that office and say, hey, I'm tired of this. We don't need 1.7 million immigrants into our country every year. We're not going to survive it ecologically. We're not going to survive it sociologically. We're certainly not going to survive it linguistically, and we're not going to survive it culturally. You know, there was another big one that just came out of Canada. Immigration is destroying Canada. It's literally displacing the Canadian people out of their own country.
Wow.
Where they're going to become a minority here, you know, within the next 20, 30 years, because they're a much smaller population than we are. So Trudeau really will be the father of the destruction of Canada. And Teddy Kennedy will be the father of the destruction of the United States of America with his 1965 Immigration Reform Act. So whatever and whomever and why they're doing this to their own countries is way beyond my understanding. I do not understand. And just I'll report, you know, in January I sent out 20 packets of the press releases on trying to get on 60 Minutes and NPR and ABC and NBC and CBS and certainly PBS, Terry Gross, and right on down the line, not a single response from any of them. So you can see there are huge forces out there that have a lot of money, and they want to make sure that this issue does never, never comes to the surface until the time, by the time we get the next 110 million people added to this country, everybody's screwed, and nobody wins. I mean, nobody. And, so, and there's no recovery from it either. One of the things I've learned, Mark, traveling around the world when I got to Asia, and I got to China, and I got to India, and I got to Bangladesh, and certainly down in Sao Paulo, and certainly into Rio de Janeiro, Japan, right there at Narita Airport, and certainly in Tokyo and Hong Kong. These population, when you get to Mexico City, I mean, there's 20 million people in Mexico City. There's probably two million plus on the outside are living in you know box huts, and the poverty is so grave and so widespread. There's no way to solve it. Well, that's what's going to happen to us. I mean, it's a guaranteed fact. That's what's going to happen to us. We are not, at some point, we can't solve the 90,000 homeless in Los Angeles. We can't solve the 11,000 homeless in San Francisco, and we can't solve the 6,000 homeless in Seattle. You know, we got 10,000 right here in Denver. We can't solve it. There's nobody solving it. It just continues to grow. And so I always ask you, you know, the listener right today at this broadcast, how do you think we're going to solve it with another 110,000 or 110 million third world people who are coming from poverty, who are coming from illiteracy, who are coming from cultures that simply don't have the ability to go to school and become useful and educated individuals that contribute to our society? And then how do you deal with the water issues? How do you deal with the energy issues? And then the pollution issues? And then the destabilization of our environment? I'm astounded that the powers that be, the ones that are up there on top, I mean, they should be tearing their hair out, because I know that everybody listening to this broadcast for us, you know, with us the last 3, 4, 5 months now, you're getting educated more than just about anybody else in the country from what I've been, you know, sharing with you from my book and my experiences that are the foundation of my book.
Hmm. You know, we're at a real turning point in our history. Like a historical turning point, aren't we?
Oh yeah, we are. Yeah, and the historical turning point for this country is going down. I mean, it's not. Oh yeah, we're turning left or right, or we're turning upwards or no, we're not going up, and we're not going right and left. We're going over a cliff, and it's a turning point, all right. Like I say, if there's any way, any person listening to this broadcast can get me on 60 Minutes, and I've got another 30, 40 other speakers that are just as articulate as I am, who are experts in their fields, the water field, the energy field, certainly the resources, I've got them. I gave my speech, the Perfect Storm Gathering Over America, last Monday night at an organization here in Denver. And I gave those two videos. You know, first I started it off with the two videos. We're going to add 140 million people. I mean, that is what is happening. It's not stopping. It's happening. And if we don't stop it, it will come to fruition. And then there are no solutions. It becomes irreversible and unsolvable. And the people when I gave the 5-minute video, then I gave the 10-minute video, they were shocked right off the bat. And then I started, you know, connecting all the dots with my three aspects of the perfect storm about to land on America. And then I gave them two pages of here's what you can do. And wow, I mean, they were stunned. It was almost like they were in a kind of a trauma situation. I said, this is sobering information. Just like everyone that's been listening to our broadcast over the last 3, 4, 5 months or so. You darn tootin', it's sobering information, if not extraordinarily depressing, and yet we are in charge of doing something to change course so that at this turning point in history, we actually do stop all immigration into the United States, that we do push for major changes in energy and water usage and consumption levels and recycling levels and carbon footprint levels. We have got to do it, or we're not going to survive the 21st century as a viable civilization. That is a guaranteed fact. There's no way to get around it. What I'm sharing with you is absolutely coming at us like a freight train with no brakes.
It's very interesting because overpopulation and immigration are really the greatest threats, but it's almost treated like a background issue.
Totally.
And what we see are things like Trump's lawyer, Michael Cohen. He's going to prison for lying to Congress, and yet he's been asked to be a witness against Trump in this 116th Congress. And he's guilty of tax violations, lying to banks. He silenced that one woman that Trump had an affair with, years ago. So I think what we're seeing here, and this is the question I would say, is are the Democrats using Michael Cohen to try to remove Trump from office?
Well, they could be, and they might. But again, that's a farce in itself because the Senate is dominated with 54 votes by Republicans. And I guarantee you, Republicans, just like the Democrats, did not impeach or convict Bill Clinton of his egregious little nasty deal, lying and everything else, but they're not going to impeach Trump. They're just not. It's a sideshow. Everything you see, whether it's Cohen, these are not even footnotes in history. They're ancillary balderdash is what they are, and they don't mean anything. What really means is, what are we doing about massive influx of third world people by the millions every year into our country, and how do we survive that, and what are we doing about the water shortages in seven states, and what are we doing about the anchor babies, what are we doing about E-Verify, what are we doing about stopping the visa overstays, which are like 30-40% of all the illegals coming into our country, what are we doing about the underground economies, what are we doing about all the employers of illegal aliens that are continuing to thwart all of our taxes and all of our systems? What are we doing about all those illegals that are they're on food stamps and their children are getting free medical that we're paying for? All of these, and I put them in the letter, I said, these are what we need to be dealing with, and instead we get a sideshow like Michael Cohen.
Yeah.
But he's a flatulation in the wind, I'm telling you. I mean, his everything means nothing. Totally nothing.
You know, one thing that you said, I think, last show about this Ihan Omar, this woman.
Yep, Ihan Omar.
She's a Somalian American politician. Is she working, I think, as a U.S. representative? Is it for Minnesota?
That's correct.
And she's been calling to abolish ICE, immigration. And
ICE and DHS. And DHS.
I mean, do we have traitors now in our own government? This is absurd, right?
Oh, that's right. Oh, yeah. Both her and that Rashida in Dearborn, Michigan, both are absolutely out to create Sharia law. They are absolutely anti-Israel. They're anti-American. I mean, these two are literally anti-American, and the fools that are in Minnesota and Michigan there voted them into office. How about you just vote somebody to cut your throat? Oh, okay, I'll just vote somebody who wants to cut my throat. And they're telling us what they're going to do to us.
Yeah.
I mean, and I've given plenty of quotes here from the Quran and people from CARE and all these other organizations. Again, we now have an average of 25 honor killings in this country and 500,000 cases of female genital mutilation. And these people are getting away with it in this first world country. That's assault and battery. You should go to jail if you're a parent or a doctor or a midwife that performs that assault and battery operation on a child. It is assault and battery. They should go to jail. Those doctors in Detroit, two of them plus the staff, should have gone to jail. They're walking free right now.
It's amazing. I never looked at it, but of course it would be illegal, right? I mean,
of course, it's
abuse.
against the law. Nobody can do anything to your body unless you choose to do it. Nobody has the right to put a tattoo on you. Only you have the right to say, okay, yeah, I want a tattoo, and you go get a tattoo. Nobody has the right to cut out your clitoris, your labia is majora and minora, and sew up your vagina when you're 9 years old and don't know what the heck's going on. But that's what those Muslims do in this country and around the world. Every woman is completely neutered as a sexual person, and they no longer have any ability to have sexuality in their lives. And the thing is, it's so sickening, is they do it with glass and or razor blades, and they simply here in Colorado, we had to get a law against it because so many of the little kids were being brought in with the vaginal sepsis infection and were dying from them. You know, because these people are, these are 6th century barbarians is what they are, to do such a god-awful operation. It's amazing to me that the feminists in this country aren't screaming at the top of their lungs to absolutely stop this kind of behavior. And the honor killings. Obviously, there's only 25 average honor killings every year in the United States, but for those 25 women to get, you know, shot or their heads cut off or get buried in the backyard in these Islamic communities, that's what's going on, and they shouldn't have to sit here in fear of their lives. But there's 20,000 honor killings every year around the world in Islamic countries, so that these women are in fear for their lives all their lives. A man wants to get rid of them, he can just go out, shoot them, or chop their head off, kill them, throw them in the backyard, bury them, and then go on and get the next woman. It's absurd, and it's barbaric, and yet it's now going on here in the United States of America. And that's documented, folks. I've got the documentation for all this.
And it's strange because these religions, they have a powerful hold over people.
Oh, geez. Oh, yeah.
And they
it's
continue,
a virus.
They continue to do this kind of thing. See the horror of what they're doing or something.
No, those were two educated medical doctors there in Dearborn, Michigan, that were cutting these girls for the last 12 years now. They cut thousands of kids.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Hmm. Oh, yeah. I mean, there's 500. This is documented. This was by Ed O'Callaghan of DHS, Assistant District Attorney, February 2nd, 2018. He gave a report right there in the White House press room and stated these facts right at just like, yep, 500,000 cases in America of female genital mutilation, average of 23 to 27 honor killings every year.
So
women.
We're not really living under the rule of law anymore, or it's a very superficial veneer of civilization that we're still holding on to.
Right, it's pretty selective, yeah, because you've got all these illegals, about 22 to 25 million of them in this country, according to the Yale University report on illegal aliens residing in America. They came out in October of 2018. Which completely blew the roof off the usual, oh, it's just 11 million. No, it's 22 million at least, and up to 25 million. And they're creating a completely different America, a completely non-integrated, non-assimilated, non-English-speaking America. And they're working in an underground economy, the largest underground economy in the world. And we're all getting bled to death because they're shipping out about $120 billion a year to their home countries. You sit here and you go, I'm telling you, it's like, what? And so that's why I wrote that letter with 10 points. What are my two senators doing? And the answer is they're doing nothing. They're none of them. The whole majority of the Congress of the United States, 535 of them, are doing nothing for the American people to solve these problems. And they give us that stupid, stupid Michael Cohen hearing in the front of the cameras, and they ask all these stupid questions. It doesn't mean diddly squat. He's going to go to prison. He cheated on something. So what? Just get down the road. Let's get to the business of the people. Let's solve the real problems facing this country.
I saw somewhere on the news this weekend, I think, that MS-13 mm-hmm. now is starting to attack police officers at their
right.
homes in some cities, correct?
That's correct. Yes, I read the same thing. I read about that. But here's the thing, and I've said it many, many years now as I've written all my columns, and I've written thousands of columns, is that as you see more and more of the third world migrate into America, and I said, corruption is a mechanism by which third world countries operate. You bring millions of third world people into this country that operate through corruption. That's their mechanism. Then they start to move into arenas such as the House of Representatives and in the Senate, And then they get into the city councils. I mean, there's 240 sanctuary cities in this country. Obviously, they are corrupt.
I did not know
they're
that.
Corrupt. They've broken the laws. It's against the law. It's Section 8 of the U.S. Code. It's against the law to protect illegal aliens in this country. And yet our own elected officials do it. And it's right here in Colorado's perfect example. Denver, Boulder, perfect example of sanctuary cities. Schools are going to heck in a handbasket. Spanish is in all these other languages, 173 different languages in Denver public schools, somewhere between 300,000 and 400,000 illegals in the state of Colorado. And they send all their money back. They use all of our medical care. They're using our schools. They're using our free breakfasts and lunches. It's all against the law. And yet, it's continuing. And so you're seeing it now, MS-13, now it operates in well over 50 American cities. I mean, it's got drug networks that are working because these guys are protected and have immunity from deportation. And you can't catch them anyway because they're so entrenched. And they've got two and three different walls between them and their dealers. Hmm. And who's caught in the middle? What is it? I think it's like 13 kids die of drug overdoses every hour in this country.
What?
I'm pretty sure. Look it up. Wow. I think it's 13. Oh, yeah, that was in the it was on a TV ad here in Denver, Colorado, and it says we need to deal with the drug addictions and so forth. And I'm pretty sure it was 13 teens die every hour in this country. I mean, we had 60,000-70,000 opioid deaths in the last couple of years.
Wow.
I mean, it's another thing. You know, 100,000 people die in this country every year from prescription drugs.
Mm-hmm.
Prescription mm-hmm. drugs. Why is the FDA continually allowing doctors to write, prescriptions for drugs that are killing people to the tune of 100,000 per year? You know, and out of 330 million people, that may not seem like much, but I'll guarantee you it certainly means a lot to the people who died
right.
and then their families. So, yeah,
sure.
Like I say, U.S. Congress and what's going on in this country is beyond my comprehension of why we're allowing this happen in this country, this country of laws and the rule of law and all the success that's brought us. And instead, we're going toward third world corruption and all the gangsters and all the liars and the cheats and the thieves that are a part of all that.
You know, this MS-13 attack on police in their homes, the only way to stop that sort of thing is you like have to declare war on MS-13, literally. And I think the military should be involved in this because the police shouldn't have to worry about getting attacked in their own home when they're off duty. It's absurd.
Well, it shows you how endemic the corruption has become.
Yeah.
Again, there's 70 billion dollars worth of drugs coming across the Mexican border. I don't know what it is coming across the Canadian border into this country every year, being distributed by MS-13 gang networks to all of the kids. And you see the heroin addictions of our kids, and you go, oh my God. And the thing is, we let it go for so long that MS-13, they're clever little criminals, and they can absolutely usurp the laws by creating, you know, layers of protection between them, the kingpins, and then just the dealers. You can catch the dealers and all that, but to get a hold of those drug kingpins, look what it took to take Chapo down. It took him, must have taken him 10, 15, 20 years to get Chapo.
No kidding.
He had $14 billion. His bank account was $14 billion.
Now, do you know much of the story behind that? Did they have to, like, go down to Mexico and, like, literally attack him there? Or what did they do? Or was he in the
U.S.? Yeah,
that's
what they did. They actually, they trailed him, and they had a lot. It was a joint task force of U.S. drug personnel and some, you know, just like Navy SEAL teams, if you will. And they just kept more and more notes after he had that one, obviously, he's got a lot of people helping him because he escaped from a prison. You know, it was a dugout prison and then a tunnel. And he even had a motorcycle for him to drive out of there. And, I saw the story on him. And then they finally retracked him down. They pretty much did like they did with Osama bin Laden. If any of you ever read the book on, you know, the capturing of was called No Ordinary Day. Mm-hmm. I'll tell you what, holy my, hell, oh my God. But, I mean, that was a page burner, turner of a book I read. Hmm. But they caught him because they caught his messengers. And that's where they found Osama bin Laden right there in Pakistan. And then they smartly said, well, we're not going to tell the Pakistanis because, heck, somebody would have just told him he would have got out of there and he'd be off doing his thing. Instead, they just ran two helicopters in there and they got a hold of him and they killed him right at the top of the stairs and collected all of his, you know, so amazing. Here he is, a nice Muslim guy, right? And he's got more pornographic material than
porno.
Oh, yeah, he was, yeah, total pornographic material. His whole bedroom.
I did not know that.
Oh, yeah, yeah, you read the book and you find it all out. So, yeah, anyway, they caught Chapo with that ability to do that. But then the thing is, Chapo, there's another five or so Chapos to replace him.
Yeah.
So, again, the war on drugs has been going on since 1971 when I just freshly got out of college, and nothing has changed. I mean, $70 billion a year in drugs are being consumed in the United States of America, and it's killing thousands, tens of thousands of our citizens.
And you mentioned Pakistan, that they found him in Pakistan, but I think the Pakistanis and Indians are fighting again. I think the Pakistan military just downed two Indian warplanes, captured one of their pilots. So, and it's all this war over Kashmir, right?
Yep.
And that war's been going on, this conflict's been going on for like 70-some years.
That's right. Well, that's why, Pakistan broke off from India because of the Muslims. The Muslims didn't want to be around, the Hindus and then the rest of them. And so, yeah, that's why Pakistan broke off from India.
Kashmir is a beautiful place, parts of it.
Cool. Oh,
it's gorgeous. It's like Switzerland. It's amazing.
Yeah, it really is.
So, I mean, these guys both have nuclear weapons, and that's one of the biggest fears, right, is that they're going to finally go after each other with nukes.
Yeah.
Do you think that's possible?
You know, the thing is, when you've got such barbaric minds, I mean, everybody here in America, you have a Western mindset. It's reasonable. It's rational. Mm-hmm. It's logical. You are trained as you grow up. You common sense, reasoning, critical thinking. You get into these third world countries, and especially Islamic countries, I got to tell you, there's no such thing as common sense. There's no such thing as reason. There's no such thing as rational thinking. There's no such thing as critical thinking. These people are tribes. They're made up of tribes, and they literally are ethnic. And whether it's the Sunnis against the Shiites, they're both Muslims, but they hate each other's guts and they kill each other. Mm-hmm. They kill each other with abandon. And so, yeah, I wouldn't trust anything. So if they start nuking each other or whatever they're going to do, we're all going to have the fallout. But you hope at some point some of the wiser people at the top say, hey, we're going to do so much collateral damage here that it's just not going to be worth it. So
now, did you want to talk about plastics again? Because I have a ton of other questions and things I could ask you about. But I want to make sure you have the opportunity to cover what you really intended.
Well, the plastics aspect of what's happening to not only our country and all the consequences of it, it's the biggest thing is it's giving the oceans the oceans of grief, if you will. I would this heart within me burns. Each person listening to this broadcast, go to This Heart Within Me Burns, and it's about Midway Island. You can look it up right there on YouTube, and it's a 10-minute video on all the plastics that are choking all of the waved albatross. And I've seen waved albatross on the Galapagos Islands in my world travels. They're beautiful birds. They jump off of cliffs just to launch themselves because they're so big and so fat. But they literally can sail around for thousands of miles, and they are beautiful birds. But on Midway Island, 2,000 miles from anywhere out there in the Pacific, they're choking. The children are choking. The adults are choking because they're all swallowing and feeding all these you know, Bic lighters and bottle caps and all of the plastic things that we are discarding. And the tragedy is we're just plasticizing the oceans. And of course, for those of you who appreciate it, go look up the Great Pacific Garbage Patch. It's now, it was when Oprah talked about it and showed it 20 years ago, it's now, it was 60 million tons of plastic, size of Texas, 1,000 miles off of San Francisco, and that plastic is anywhere from 30 to 90 feet deep, and it kills millions of avian marine creatures every year.
You blew my mind. Did you say 30 to 90 feet deep?
That's right, 30 to 90 feet deep.
That is beyond my imagination. That's ghastly.
Oh, ghastly. Oh, yeah. I mean, that's why you can see this book will just, the reader of my book when it comes out in October or November, it's ghastly. That's a good word. It's ghastly. Because you've got 30 and 40 mile long drift nets that are cut loose from these big ocean going steamers who just rape the bottom of the ocean.
Yeah.
They just catch everything.
Yeah.
Well, then they get hung up on the reefs and stuff, and they have to cut these things loose, and they've got floaters on them, right? But the floaters get caught down below the water.
Jeez.
And then they get caught on the reefs. They get locked into the reefs, and so a shark goes through. Shark gets caught. Shark literally dies right there in entanglement in those all the nets. And then other animals feed on them. Then they get caught. Ridley turtles, green turtles, and I've scuba dived all the oceans of the world. And I tell you, the oceans are, you know, in 55 years since I first started scuba diving, the oceans are just turned into plastic trash. I mean, we've dumped everything you can imagine out there, and we keep dumping 3.5 million more pieces of plastic every 24 hours, 365 days a year. And for those of you who care enough, it's called www.4ocean.com, 4ocean.com. It's two surfers, and they're out cleaning up the oceans and the rivers and certainly the beaches in 27 different countries, and are trying to expand. But, of course, it's a losing proposition. I've written columns that we should have a 25-cent deposit return law internationally to give an incentive. If you go to China, you go to India, you go to Bangladesh, I mean, the rivers are just literally a foot of plastic. A foot of plastic. I've got pictures of me and knee-deep in plastic, if I can find them. But I'm not kidding. Yeah. Oh, yes. And now the 60 million tons of plastic is 100 million tons since 20 years ago. It's 100 million tons.
Yeah.
And it's killing millions of avian life, and it's killing millions of sea creatures, whales included, and dolphins included, because they eat that plastic as if it was food, and then their guts stuff up and they die. Yeah,
I don't know that much about the plastic industry, but that would be an interesting thing to study as well. Where they get the stuff that they make plastics out of.
Oil.
Yeah, it's all petroleum, right?
Oh, it's all petroleum, that's
which
right.
Which we're running out of anyway, right?
That's right. That might be the best thing about petroleum, is we're running out
of it. We're going to run out of it. So they take petroleum and they modify it in some way to make plastic bottles, plastic containers.
And oh, everything. Yeah.
And they continue to do this. And they're cranking this out as fast as they possibly can, right?
Oh, if you go to Home Depot or Lowe's or any hardware store, look at the packaging. Go to your grocery store. Look at the packaging.
Right.
Look at everything that's in plastic. I mean, you milk in plastic. You got juice in plastic. You got naked drinks in plastic. You got your ketchup in plastic. You got jams in plastic. Peanut butters in everything. I mean, and with no responsibility whatsoever once it's sold to the customer, none. And only 30% of Americans recycle. Only 30. 70% of Americans don't care.
So Dow Chemicals creating plastics, mm-hmm. ExxonMobil, mm-hmm. some of these companies I've never heard of, Lyondell, Basil, Sabic.
Yep, all of them.
Yeah, they're making billions $49 billion from Dow Chemical. Lyondell Basel, $33 billion. ExxonMobil. Well, I don't know if this is all from plastics, but it says $236 billion. So this is a gigantic industry that no one really talks about.
And again, and then I've got a whole chapter on the chemicals. There's 70,000 chemicals that are injected into the air, the land, and the water 24/7.
Goodness.
That's the reality that we're facing, and only 2% of all those chemicals. And it's like right now, it's called JudicialWatch.com, Judicial Watch, which I'm a member. The Judicial Watch is suing Monsanto, what now is called Bayer, over Roundup, because Roundup has got glyphosate and it's getting into human breast milk, it's getting into wines, it's getting into all the foods, and you're eating it. I mean, you know, we're eating it, and they've been telling us just like for years that Roundup is just fabulous, and then the Roundup Ready seeds, which are all chemicalized, the corn, all the Roundup corn, all the Roundup soy, it wards off all the insects, but then you're eating poison food, and you know it's like the high fructose corn syrup, that's made out of Roundup, and it's made out of Roundup, seeds. And so when you have all this high fructose corn syrup and sucralose, which is another synthetic sugar, guess what? You're poisoning your own body. Go to Smucker's Jams. They got sucralose. They got aspartame. They've got high fructose corn syrup. It's like Sunsweet. You know, Sunsweet. They give you regular prune juice, and it's all prune juice. But you get to their prunes, and they've got high fructose corn syrup right there. And I wrote them and I called them. I said, why don't you just put prune juice in the prunes? And they said, well, we'll bring that to our scientists here and see what we can do about that. Wow. Well, of course they didn't do anything about it. So everybody that's eating prunes, and prunes is high fiber, and that's what I do. Right. That you sit there and you get high fructose corn syrup, which is a GMO. I mean, they poison you any way they can. You know, for those of you who want to watch two great movies, one of them is called What the Health. It's on Netflix. What the Health. The other one's called Health. Just H-E-A-L-T-H, Health. There's another one called Veducated. Another one's called Cowspiracy. If you saw those three or four films, you would sit there and go, oh my gosh. You would only go to an organic store. You would be very picky on what you put into your kids' mouths. You would never eat another Dorito for the rest of your life. You certainly wouldn't drink a bottle of Coca-Cola or Mountain Dew or Pepsi, because it's just poison water, what it does. Wow. There's 15 consequences to drinking Coca-Cola. I did a story on it. In fact, I sent the story to one of my friends at the rec center where I work out, and he says, I thought Coke was bad for you, but they're all bad for you. I said, that's right, every one of them. And there's 15 different consequences to drinking a soda pop of any kind.
Now explain, what kind of consequences?
Oh, well, first of all, when you drink, say, Mountain Dew, or a Red Bull, or the 5-Hour Energy drink, it gives you a massive shot of caffeine, which raises your blood pressure, causes PVCs, which are premature ventricle contractions, and then it causes what a premature ventricle contraction is.
Is that like something that's really attacking your heart?
Yeah, it makes your heart hiccup. So it's like having a Corvette. Just say your heart's a Corvette, and you put four new tires on it, and you don't balance them. And then you take it on an expressway and you're running 70, 80 miles an hour, or whatever you run it. Guess what? Your tires are getting burned off and you're bouncing all over the place because the tires are hiccuping because they're out of balance. Wow. So a PVC hiccups your heart and it causes it to wear out faster. Think of everybody that drinks all these soda pops every day. They're getting getting the PVC. They're getting the caffeine rush. They're also getting their blood pressure is rising 10 to 20 points, which then stresses the heart. I could probably find this. I mean, I'm blown away by this. If I can go through my because I wrote it just about 3 months ago.
You could
probably have
a premature heart attack then if you kept drinking Diet Coke or whatever.
Oh, and people have. Teenagers have died from drinking too much Red Bull. Yeah, they've died. They had a heart attack.
Wow.
That was on, I think it was on 60 Minutes about 3 weeks ago. Kid absolutely had a heart attack and died.
That's so all these chemicals are in all these foods, and all these chemical companies are making all these billions of dollars, and they're poisoning everybody, and they're poisoning the planet, and we can't see the forest for the trees. It's like we can't really see what we're doing, because if we really understood what we were doing, we would stop, right?
You would think so. Oh, yeah. I talk about the dental caries. You know, I remember when Coke hit 100 a couple of years back, and the guy said, well, I'm so glad we brought Coke to the world. Well, I can tell you, you go into third world countries, and they're all addicted to the caffeine and the sugar and the caramel of a Coca-Cola. Yeah. Guess what? They all lost their teeth. They got two eye teeth on the top and two eye teeth on the bottom, all because they don't have dentals down there. And when Coke gets in between your teeth, it just rots all your molars. It rots all your inside. I mean, it just goes right after everything. And so third world countries, they get addicted to the Coke and the sugar, and all of a sudden, they suffer all of the dental caries. Yeah, like I say, as soon as I find this, I'll send it to you after our session is over, and yeah, you'll sit here and you go, oh, my God, you will never drink another soda pop the rest of your life. You know, drink some orange juice, drink some water, drink fruit juice, but do not drink any soda pops, because whether it rots your teeth or busts your heart all to pieces, and then the other 10, 15 different things that I found out about it. Yeah, being an investigative research journalist like I am, you find out what's going on under the surface.
You know, and the thing of it is, if people just knew these things, they would, if they could really believe and understand what you're saying, they would have to either cut way back or stop a lot of this, because
they sure as heck would brush your teeth after every time and floss after every Coke.
Well, and that's what makes me wonder, because our diet is so bad, and a lot of our dentistry is just to keep and fight off the bad diet, right? I mean, if we didn't eat this sugar, gosh, I think we're out of time, Frosty.
Yeah, I'm saying, I've got the Coke poison right here, so I'll send you this in an email. You can share it with everyone, or we can go over it next week. But, yeah, again, every person listening, I hope you do join numbersusa.org and become part of 9 million people who care about the future. Because in the end, you know, all the things we're talking about, if we don't stop this mass population growth in our country by mass immigration, your kids are cooked.
Thanks, Frosty. It's always fun, man. I appreciate it a lot.
Always a pleasure, Mark. Thank you.
Bye-bye.